for great day.
This is VOA News. I'm Richard Green. Video released by the Ukrainian military appears to show fighting in the eastern part of the country, where soldiers from Kyiv have fought Russian invaders for months. Reuters correspondent Zachary Goldman reports.
A GoPro camera mounted on a Ukrainian tank claims to show fighting near the shattered city of Bakhmut in a battle both sides have described as a meat grinder, but neither has so far managed to win. The tank platoon's commander, call sign Bender, told Reuters his unit fired on Russian positions in support of Ukrainian infantry. Russia has claimed in recent days to have made progress in street-by-street fighting. British intelligence on Wednesday said Ukrainian forces had successfully pushed the Russians back from one of the city's main supply routes. The head of a private Russian mercenary group heavily involved in the Bakhmut operation on Wednesday acknowledged that the fighting had badly damaged his forces.
That was Reuters correspondent Zachary Goldman. U.S. President Joe Biden says global leaders are turning the tide and stemming a years-long backslide of democratic institutions.
I believe this is a defining challenge of our age. And today, we can say with pride that the democracies of the world are getting stronger, not weaker. Autocracies of the world are getting weaker, not stronger.
At his second democracy summit on Wednesday, Biden looked to spotlight hopeful advancements over the past year, despite Russia's war in neighboring Ukraine and U.S. tensions with China over its military and economic influence in the Indo-Pacific region and beyond. The Vatican says Pope Francis will be hospitalized for several days for treatment of a respiratory infection after experiencing difficulty breathing in recent days. Vatican spokesman Matteo Bruni says the 86-year-old Francis does not have COVID-19, but requires several days of therapy. This is VOA News. Migrants and activists held a vigil in the Mexican border city of Ciudad Juarez on Tuesday for the dozens who died during a fire in a migrant detention center. Reuters correspondent Rachel Graham reports.
New video has emerged that is believed to be surveillance camera footage from inside the Mexican detention center near the U.S. border, where Monday's fire disaster killed at least 38 migrants. And it appears to show how quickly the smoke and flames spread throughout the facility. In the video, you can see migrants kicking at the door of their cell with flames nearby. People in uniforms are seen walking past and making no attempt to open the gate. The fire was apparently started by migrants protesting deportations. Within moments, the smoke is so thick you can no longer see.
That was Reuters correspondent Rachel Graham. The New York City grand jury investigating hush money paid on behalf of former U.S. President Donald Trump is scheduled to consider other matters next week before taking a previously scheduled two-week break. Here's AP correspondent Julie Walker.
That hiatus in the Trump grand jury proceedings is according to a person familiar with the matter, speaking on condition of anonymity, and means a vote on whether or not to indict the former president likely wouldn't come until late April at the earliest. The break was scheduled in advance to coincide with the holidays and school vacation. However, people familiar with grand juries cautioned that the schedule could change and prosecutors could still ask jurors to consider charges or vote on an indictment on one of the days they're expected to meet on other matters. Julie Walker, New York.
An Australian startup has developed a food based on a long extinct animal. The AP's Ed Donahue has that story.
A few days before April 1st, a company called Vow unveiled a big meatball made of lab-grown cultured meat using the genetic sequence from the long-extinct pachyderm.
The mammoth meatball.
This is not an April Fool's joke. This is a real innovation.
Founder Jim Noakesmith says livestock doesn't need to be killed to produce the mammoth meatball.
We know now that it died from climate change. What we wanted to do was see if we could create something that was a symbol of a more exciting future that's not only better for us, but also better for the planet.
The mammoth meatball is a one-off and has not been tasted and won't be sold. I'm Ed Donahue.
Elon Musk and a group of artificial intelligence experts and industry executives are calling for a 6-month pause in developing systems more powerful than OpenAI's newly launched GPT-4 in an open letter citing risks to society. Earlier this month, Microsoft-backed OpenAI opened the fourth iteration of its GPT AI program, which has wowed users by engaging them in human-like conversation. I'm Richard Green for VOA News.
Today is Thursday, March 30th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I am Gina Dufo in Washington. Coming up in the next half hour, China warns of reprisals as Taiwan's leader visits Washington.
China, which claims democratically ruled Taiwan as its own territory, has repeatedly warned U.S. officials not to meet Tsai, viewing it as support for the island's desire to be seen as a separate country.
Russia holds missile test information with the U.S. over the Ukraine conflict.
In remarks carried by Russian news agencies, Deputy Foreign Minister Sergei Ryabkov says Moscow has halted all information exchanges with Washington.
And Pope Francis is in hospital for treatment after experiencing difficulty breathing. We'll have these stories and more next on International Edition. Stay tuned. Taiwan President Tsai Ing-wen says external pressure would not stop Taiwan from engaging with the world. She made her statement before she arrived in the United States, hitting a defiant note after China threatened retaliation if she met U.S. House Speaker Kevin McCarthy. Rachel Graham of Reuters has more.
Taiwan's determination to go global will only grow stronger. Taiwan is the world's Taiwan. Leading Taiwan to the world and bringing the world into Taiwan is an important goal of our administration. External pressure will not hinder our determination to go to the world. We're calm and confident, will neither yield nor provoke.
China, which claims democratically ruled Taiwan as its own territory, has repeatedly warned U.S. officials not to meet Tsai, viewing it as support for the island's desire to be seen as a separate country. A spokesperson for China's Taiwan Affairs Office, Zhu Fenglian, told reporters that it would be, quote, another provocation that seriously violates the One China principle, harms China's sovereignty and territorial identity, if Tsai were to have contact with McCarthy, adding that China, quote, firmly opposes this and will definitely take measures to resolutely fight back. China staged war games around Taiwan last August, when then US House Speaker Nancy Pelosi visited Taipei. Taiwan's armed forces have said they are keeping watch for any Chinese moves while Tsai is abroad. Tsai is going to Guatemala and Belize, transiting through New York first and Los Angeles on the way back. While not officially confirmed, she is expected to meet McCarthy while in California. Taiwanese presidents routinely pass through the United States while visiting diplomatic allies in Latin America, the Caribbean and the Pacific, which, although not official visits, are often used by both sides for high-level meetings.
That's Rachel Graham of Reuters, and the White House urged China on Wednesday not to use, quote, a normal, unquote, stopover in the United States by Tsai Ing-wen's Taiwan's president as a pretext to increase aggressive activity against Taiwan. The White House National Security spokesperson John Kirby told reporters that Taiwan president's arrival in the United States is in the latest in a series of routine transits. Kirby said they were mindful that things were tense between the United States and China, but he urged Beijing to keep lines of communications open.
This transit is consistent with our long-standing, unofficial relationship with Taiwan, and it is consistent with the United States' one-China policy, which remains unchanged. It is Taiwan's decision to make these transits based on their own travel. Transits are not visits. They are private, and they're unofficial. I would also remind everyone that this is not new. Every Taiwan president has transited the United States. President Tsai Ing-wen herself has transited the U.S. six times since taking office in 2016, each time without incident. In all previous transits, she met with members of Congress as well as state and local officials and had public appearances. She has also transited through both New York and Los Angeles before, not uncommon. The People's Republic of China should not use this transit as a pretext to step up any aggressive activity around the Taiwan Strait. The United States and China have differences when it comes to Taiwan, but we have managed those differences for more than 40 years. President Biden and this administration has been keeping the lines of communication open with Beijing. We want to see that continue on this issue and other issues across the board.
That's John Kirby, the White House National Security spokesperson. A senior Russian diplomat says Moscow will no longer inform the U.S. about its missile tests following the conflict in Ukraine. Associated Press correspondent Charles de la Desma reports.
In remarks carried by Russian news agencies, Deputy Foreign Minister Sergei Ryabkov says Moscow has halted all information exchanges with Washington. President Vladimir Putin had last month suspended the New START treaty, charging that Russia can't accept US inspections of its nuclear sites under the agreement at a time when Washington and its NATO allies have openly declared Russia's defeat in Ukraine as their goal. The foreign ministry had initially said Moscow would keep notifying the US about planned test launches of its ballistic missiles, but Ryabkov's statement reflects a change of course. I'm Charles de Ledesma.
Ukraine struck a railway depot and knocked out power in the Russian-occupied city of Mariupol, deep behind front lines on Wednesday. The move came amid growing talk from Kyiv of a counter-assault against Russian forces, won out by a failed winter offensive. Since the Russian invasion in February 2022, tens of thousands of women have voluntarily joined the armed forces of Ukraine. As of the end of last year, the Ukrainian Ministry of Defense says almost 60,000 women were serving. Miroslava Gongadze met with two former journalists who have been fighting for Ukraine for a year.
We first met Margarita Rivchachenko near Izum in September. She accompanied a Voice of America TV crew looking into suspected Russian war crimes. Fragile looking but brave, she showed us the way to a newly discovered mass grave. Now a press officer for the Eastern Army Command, she was called to the capital. We met again at the office of Ukrainska Pravda, an online newspaper where she had worked before the war. When the Russians marched on Kyiv in February 2022, Rivchachenko's father signed up for the military and so did her boyfriend. She decided to do the same, enrolling in the territorial defense.
I think that if I had a gun, I would do something more for my life. I didn't want to go out of Ukraine. I would to do something more for my country.
She says the hardest thing about the war is to learn about the death of her comrades.
I'm not scared to go back to Donetsk region and to go to the position just because I feel really comfortable with my guys. But it's really hard to think about my people, my friends, my father who now in Bakhmut, my boyfriend who are serving too. So it's not hard to serve. It's really hard to wait from someone from the front.
Former TV reporter Anastasia Blishchik also enrolled in the armed forces of Ukraine. A native of Kherson, she says that for 3 years she wanted to join the army but hesitated. That changed when the Russian launched a full-scale offensive, walking along Mikhailovska Square in Kyiv next to the wrecked Russian armed vehicles on display. She remembers that decisive moment.
On February 24th, I took my fiancé, a journalist, a soldier of the 95th Air Assault Brigade, Alexander Makhov, to the military commissariat. On February 25th, he called me and said, "How are you?" I said that I would sign up for the military, and he supported my decision.
Then tragedy came. In May, her fiancé was killed in the battles for Izum.
It seemed that people like him were immortal. I thought it could happen to anyone, but not to him.
And
when I got the call, I didn't want anyone to hear what I heard. It was tough.
Nearly a year later, away from the front, despite big victories, her grief is still raw.
It's easier for me there. I saw with my eyes the liberation of Izum, the liberation of the village of Dovhenki, where Sasha died. Izum and Dovhenki are ours, but it doesn't make me feel any better.
Izum наш, Dovhenki, хляти, це наше, але мені не легше від цього.
Блищик, who is eager to go back to the front, explains what victory means to her.
Victory will come not only when we return all our territories, but when we cleanse our country of all traitors, when all Ukrainians understand that our language is the most powerful weapon, and when there is respect for all of those who are now on the front.
Мирослава Гонгадзе, VOA News, Kyiv, Ukraine.
The U.S. State Department is hosting the second Summit of Democracy this week, including 120 countries, civil society groups and technological companies. The mostly virtual summit includes some countries that have been criticized recently for undemocratic policies such as India, Israel and Poland. Tuesday's event focused on Ukraine, as VOA's senior diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sain reports.
A Ukrainian unit fires a French-made howitzer toward the Russian lines in the eastern Donetsk region as Ukraine continues to try to repel Russia's invasion. Ukrainian Foreign Minister Dmitry Kuleba spoke remotely Tuesday to the U.S.-organized Democracy Summit, saying the Ukrainian people want peace more than anyone, but peace at any cost is an illusion.
The Ukrainian people will accept peace only if it guarantees the cessation of Russian aggression in full, the complete withdrawal of Russian troops from Ukrainian territory, and the restoration of our state's territorial integrity within internationally recognized borders.
Secretary of State Antony Blinken opened a panel discussion of the Democracy Summit Tuesday, saying nothing illustrates the threat to democracies from dictatorships better than Russia's unprovoked invasion of Ukraine. Blinken embraced Ukraine's peace proposal and rejected others, such as China's, without naming names.
I think we all have to be very much aware and beware of what may seem to be well-intentioned efforts, for example, to call for ceasefires, which would potentially have the effect of freezing in place the conflict, allowing Russia to consolidate the gains that it's made, and simply use the time to rest and refit and then reattack.
One expert told VOA that President Joe Biden's second democracy summit faces several challenges, including tensions with close U.S. allies such as Israel. But he said winning support for Ukraine is a major focus of the summit. Michael Kimmage is a history professor at Catholic University. He spoke to VOA via Zoom.
You have dramatic events in Israel that go to the core of what Israel is as a democracy. You have backsliding among various European countries. It's kind of an old story. But I think the core problem for President Biden is that you have a lot of democracies, South Africa, Brazil, and India, for example, that are not especially supportive of the U.S. position on the war in Ukraine.
Kimmage told VOA that despite the challenges, the achievements on the battlefield under the leadership of Ukraine's democratically elected president, Volodymyr Zelensky, against what is on paper a superior Russian military, is an inspiration and could be a galvanizing force for democracy around the world. Cindy Sain, VOA News.
In other news, the Vatican says Pope Francis will be hospitalized for several days for treatment of a pulmonary infection after experiencing difficulty breathing in recent days. Vatican spokesman Matteo Bruni says Francis, 86, does not have COVID-19, but requires several days of therapy. He said Wednesday that Francis had been suffering some breathing trouble in recent days and went to the Gemelli Hospital for tests. Bruni's statement said, quote, "The test showed a respiratory infection, COVID-19 infection excluded, that will require some days of medical therapy." European Union countries have approved a landmark law that stipulates all new cars sold from 2035 must have zero emissions. Ilan Rubens of Reuters has more.
New cars sold in the European Union must be zero emission starting from 2035. A landmark law was agreed by EU countries after Germany won an exemption for cars running on e-fuels. The target is designed to drive a rapid decarbonisation of new car fleets in Europe. New EU law will also require all new cars sold from 2030 to have 55% lower CO2 emissions versus 2021 levels. Transport accounts for nearly a quarter of EU emissions. But getting all member countries to agree on the proposal was not smooth sailing. After facing opposition from Germany, the European Commission pledged to create a legal route to continue sales of new cars that only run on e-fuels after 2035. That exemption offers a potential lifeline to traditional internal combustion engine vehicles. E-fuels are considered carbon neutral because they are made using captured CO2 emissions. Proponents say it balances out the CO2 released when the fuel is combusted in an engine. Environmental group Greenpeace says the deal is a setback for climate protection. Here's Greenpeace spokesperson Benjamin Stefan.
We will need e-fuels, but a lot of them in aviation, where we have no alternatives. In cars, this solution is completely inefficient because we need a lot of electricity to produce it. And an electric car would go five times as far on the same amount of electricity.
That's Ilan Rubens of Reuters. Africa and the U.S. share not only a green past, but also a hopeful future. Vice President Kamala Harris emphasized this on her first official voyage to the continent, where in one day she covered both the possibilities ahead and the pain that links both societies. VOA Senator Power traveled with the Vice President in Cape Coast, Ghana.
Vice President Kamala Harris minced no words about a foundational truth of the United States after a moving tour of Cape Coast Castle, which for many enslaved Africans was their last view of home before they were shipped across the Atlantic in chains in the bottom of overcrowded ships.
The descendants of the people who walked through that door were strong people, proud people, people of deep faith, people who loved their families, their traditions, their culture, and carried that innate being with them through all of these periods, went on to fight for civil rights, fight for justice in the United States of America and around the world. And all of us, regardless of your background, have benefited from their struggle and their fight for freedom and for justice.
Harris is on her first vice presidential tour of the continent, which takes her to Ghana, Tanzania, and Zambia. Speaking to 8,000 young people in Ghana's capital, Accra, she outlined what she sees as the continent's hopeful future.
Together, we can unleash growth and opportunity that far exceeds what either the public or private sector can achieve on its own. And the United States is committed to build these types of partnerships to increase digital inclusion on the continent. And finally, to create inclusive economic growth and to advance innovation, we must continue to support and invest in good governance and democracy.
Ghana's president said her visit has made a difference.
I'm happy to state that this afternoon's meeting has further boosted the steadfast cooperation between us, and Ghana will continue to collaborate with the United States of America at all levels.
Harris now continues to Tanzania and then to Zambia. Anita Powell, VOA News, Cape Coast, Ghana.
This is Science in a Minute.
In October 2017, astronomers found an odd celestial entity traveling through our solar system. Scientists found that this cigar-shaped space rock was the first interstellar visitor to our planetary neighborhood. Called Oumuamua, it was first thought to be a comet because of the way it accelerated from the sun. But the object didn't have some of the characteristics of a comet, such as a coma and tail. Scientists then thought it was an asteroid or a chunk of a Pluto-like planet, while others speculated the mystery visitor was really an alien probe or artifact. A pair of scientists from the University of California, Berkeley, and Cornell University suggest Oumuamua was most likely something called a dark comet, and its comet-like acceleration was provided by the release of hydrogen gas by the warming of the object's water ice. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Baobab, moringa, and hibiscus is some of the main ingredients of many of the plant-based dishes on the African continent that predominantly has little to no meat. On the next Our Voices, we'll discuss how women throughout the diaspora are embracing the Afro-vegan lifestyle and introduce you to a nutritionist who will share some of the benefits of a plant-based diet. Join the conversation Wednesdays at 1900 UTC on The Voice of America.
Hi, I'm Kim Lewis.
Join me and our panel of journalists as we discuss the top stories of the week, including we'll highlight Vice President Kamala Harris' week-long trip to Ghana, Tanzania, and Zambia. She's the highest-ranking Biden administration official to visit the continent as the White House strives to deepen its outreach and counter Chinese influence there. Don't miss Issues in the News this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Around the clock, The Voice of America keeps you in touch with the latest news.
Tune in at the top of every hour, every day of the week.
For the 5-Minute VOA Newscast.
We bring you reports from our correspondents and interviews with newsmakers from around the globe.
Give us 5 minutes and we'll give you the world.
VOA, your trusted source for news and information.
This has been International Edition on The Voice of America. On behalf of the entire production team, thank you so much for listening. Visit our website for in-depth coverage of world events and news 24 hours at voanews.com. And check out voaafrica.com for more English language programming. You can find International Edition and our current affairs programs, Encounter, Press Conference USA and Issues in the News on voanews.com. Until next time, I'm Chinedu in Washington, wishing you a wonderful day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States conducted airstrikes against Iran-linked groups in Syria after a deadly drone attack near a coalition base in northeastern Syria killed a U.S. contractor and wounded 5 U.S. service members and another U.S. contractor. At the direction of President Joe Biden, U.S. Central Command forces responded to the March 23rd drone attack and several follow-up attacks by Iran-backed forces with precision strikes against facilities used by groups affiliated with Iran's Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps. At a press briefing in Ottawa, President Biden sent a clear message. Make no mistake, the United States does not, I emphasize, seek conflict with Iran. But be prepared for us to act forcefully to protect our people. Pentagon Press Secretary Brigadier General Pat Ryder said the precision strikes by Central Command forces were intended to protect and defend U.S. personnel, and the U.S. took proportionate and deliberate action intended to limit the risk of escalation and minimize casualties. During his March 23rd testimony to the House Armed Services Committee, which occurred before the most recent attacks on U.S. forces and facilities, General Michael Eric Carrilla, the commander of U.S. Central Command, said Iranian-backed forces have attacked American troops in Syria and Iraq 78 times since the beginning of 2021. The Iranian regime now holds the largest and most capable unmanned aerial vehicle force in the region, he told Congress. What Iran does to hide its hand is they use Iranian proxies, General Carrilla said. That's either UAVs or rockets to be able to attack our forces in either Iraq or Syria. The United States has approximately 900 U.S. troops in Syria, whose mission is to ensure the enduring defeat of ISIS. Unfortunately, what you see in this situation are these Iranian-backed groups not only in Syria, but conducting operations in the Strait of Hormuz, in the Gulf, in Iraq, conducting destabilizing operations that are meant to export terror and instability, said Brigadier General Ryder. The United States and our coalition and our partners and allies are focused on trying to ensure stability, security in these regions, and that will continue to be our focus. We do not seek a wider conflict, he declared. That said, if our people are threatened, we will continue to respond appropriately and proportionately.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.